welcome back to the Power Hour. Karen Cataline, starting my Wednesdays and Fridays on the Power Hour. I've been looking forward to this for a while. I am jazzed to do it. I welcome your feedback, thoughts, whatever. Talk radio, as an old talk show host that I know from long ago said, no, man, it's master. Didn't expect the heated debate in the last segment, but to me, that's the best kind of talk radio. And I hope that we can have Howard on again to talk. Yeah, these are issues that try men's souls, I'm telling you. And just to change the subject and the mood and even the tone, we have the perfect guest for you. First, let me just tell you there's a sale this week. Got to tell you that at least once an hour, and this is the second hour. So the Power Hour, the Power Mall has a sale. Buy one, get one on Oxy Lift while supplies last. There's just one to a customer. And then buy one, get one on Tranquil by Dr. Matthew Pfeiffer. If you've been wanting to buy it and stock up, one to a, isn't that funny? Buy one and get one, but one to a customer. I think that's two to a customer, actually. But I think that's what it is. It's a BOGO offer. So go over to the Power Mall and stock up while supplies last. I guess you can only stock up on two. That being said, let's get right to our guest. This is a guest that I've interviewed once before, but it is always a pleasure to have him for an extended period of time. He is the author of many, many books, but his latest, and it has created quite a stir, is Return of the God Hypothesis. Stephen C. Meyer, Dr. Stephen C. Meyer, received his PhD from Cambridge University, no small slouch, in the philosophy of science. He directs the Center of Science and Culture at Discovery Institute in Seattle and authored the New York Times bestseller Darwin's Doubt and Signature in the Cell. Remember all the scientists who believe in evolution or at least don't believe in God? Well, guess what? Dr. Stephen Meyer isn't one of them, and he backs it up with science. So what a pleasure to have you, Dr. Stephen C. Meyer, on the Power Hour radio program.
Thank you for having me again, as it turns out.
Yeah. Well, so since we have the luxury a little bit of delving, why don't we start with your book and what it's all about, why you decided to write it, and that should take us to a deeper level of maybe a scientific backup of believing that there is an intelligent design of mankind. No small issue to discuss here on a Friday. Your book, Why God is Still the Best Scientific Theory, well, the topic, Why God is Still the Best Scientific Theory to Explain Our Life on Earth, and your book, Return of the God Hypothesis.
Well, right. We've all heard the very powerful cultural voices telling us that if you know the facts, if you're scientifically informed, then belief in God is untenable. It's intellectually untenable. It's implausible. It's, as Richard Dawkins puts it, extremely unlikely to be true. And the polling data we have about young people in particular shows that this message is percolating deep into the culture. The pollsters talk about a phenomenon they call the rise of the nuns, the religiously non or unaffiliated young atheists and agnostics. And when you probe that group of young people, you find that the number one reason for rejecting belief in God is the perception that science has undermined that belief, that there's no scientific evidence for God, the theories of biological and chemical evolution of the origin of life have made the God hypothesis unnecessary. And a distant third in one pollsters probing showed that the problem of pain and suffering. So the intellectual doubts of young people that have been spawned by exposure to these the arguments of the scientific atheists, sometimes called the new atheists, have have had a profound effect on their worldview and on their, and therefore on their lives, because ideas have consequences for all of us. Mm-hmm. I wrote the book to challenge the perception that's out there in the culture and to challenge the specific arguments that have been made by these new atheists, Richard Dawkins, Lawrence Krauss, and the litany is actually quite a long one. Since 2006, there's been six or eight prominent authors promulgating this point of view that science properly understood undermines belief in God. I think it's just the opposite.
Hmm. Well, for the pragmatists out there who are, shall we say, intentional agnostics, it's not, I don't really count myself among them anymore. I used to. It's not that I don't know and I don't care. It's that I don't know and I really care a lot. So for those people who are pragmatic and are looking for some scientific, I don't know if you can call it evidence, but certainly science to back up this position rather than it just being wishful thinking, what can you tell them about that?
That is the whole focus of my book, and thank you for asking. Interestingly, I had a piece in the Jerusalem Post over the weekend about the passing of the great physicist Steven Weinberg, also a prominent scientific atheist. And in the piece, I discuss some of these reluctant atheists and agnostics who are major public figures now, who lament the loss of religious belief and a religious mooring for our culture, but nevertheless can't get themselves across the line to actually believe. And in a way, it's for people like that that I wrote the book, because they have an open mind and they're inquiring. So let me just speak to three key pieces of evidence, three big discoveries that have been made in the last 100 years in science that provide support for a designing intelligence behind life in the universe, but also a transcendent designing intelligence, that is a being such as God rather than a space alien or something like that. The first big discovery is that the universe itself had a beginning, that even time and space, as best we can tell, began a finite time ago, before which there was no matter or energy, no physics that could be invoked to explain the origin of the universe. The origin of the universe began and seemed to require a cause that transcends matter, space, time, and energy, sometimes also known as God. The second big discovery is the discovery that the universe from the beginning or soon thereafter has been finely tuned in its basic physical parameters against all odds and for no underlying physical theoretical reason. The universe has been finely tuned to allow for the possibility of life, and this is suggested to many physicists, the possibility of a transcendent fine-tuner of, again, intelligent design, but a design present from the very beginning of the universe. And then thirdly, and perhaps most dramatically in the field of biology, particularly the field of molecular biology, scientists have discovered at the foundation of life and even the simplest living cells, a complex realm of digital technology, information stored in a 4-character digital code in the DNA molecule, and a complex information storage, transmission, and processing system that is reminiscent of our own high-tech digital world, but in many ways exceeding it. And we know from experience that information, especially in a digital form, always comes from an intelligent source. Our great hero out here in the Northwest, Bill Gates, has said the DNA is like a software program, but much more complex than any we've ever created. We know that software comes from programmers. We know that information, whenever we find it, especially in a digital form, whether it's in a hieroglyphic inscription or a paragraph in a book, or information that's embedded in a radio signal, such information always arises from an intelligent source. So the discovery of information in even the very simplest living cells provides powerful evidence for the activity of designing intelligence in the history of life. So in my book, I show that when we look at those three big discoveries together, that the universe had a beginning, that it's been fine-tuned from the beginning, and that there have been big bursts of information coming into our biosphere in the form of this digital code since the beginning, we we have, I think, powerful evidence for a designing agent who both transcends the universe and must be capable of bringing the whole of the universe into existence and fine-tuning its structure, but also a designing agent who is active in the creation. And that when you add all that up, that sounds like a God hypothesis, which is what I defend in the book.
Hmm. Not only are you smart, but you're darned articulate, too. Thank you for explaining that so well and so clearly. I think where people like to go with a person such as yourself is the idea of a personal God, and you almost alluded to that already. A personal God, not just as Thomas Jefferson is sometimes described, I don't know if it's true or not, as a deist, someone who believes that God created the universe but then just kind of said, okay, you're on your own. Versus a God that knows, cares, and has actual takes action in the everyday lives of human beings. Talk about that, if you would, a little. And this probably has more to do with faith, but maybe not.
Well, no, this is a very important question, and also is one I address in the book. But as an historical note, if you walk through the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., and see that Jefferson said that he feared for his country because of slavery, because he knew that the God of the universe was a just God who took action against injustice. It's clear that he wasn't a strict deist. He was a non-religious theist. He wasn't didn't embrace the Judeo-Christian scriptures, but he believed in a God who was active in the creation. In any case, there have been deists, and even a deistic conception of God is not the conception of a God who is impersonal in the philosophical sense of not being a mind or not having intentions or not being intelligent. There is such a concept of God that's usually associated with the Eastern traditions called with their philosophy of pantheism, where God is an impersonal entity, a kind of impersonal force that pervades all of nature and the philosophical word is coextensive with nature. God is in the matter. God is in the trees. God is in the flowers. But the flowers and the trees and the material stuff is also God. So God and the universe are one, as the kind of idea. That's a decidedly impersonal notion of God. And I don't think that fits with the data, with the evidence, because when we see evidence of fine-tuning or we see information of exquisite engineering and digital information, those are features that require that in our experience always arise from the activity of a mind or an intelligence. And so I think we're right out of the chute when we talk about the fine-tuning of the physical parameters or the digital code in DNA or the exquisite nanotechnology that we're finding in living cells. We're looking at very powerful evidence for the activity of a mind. But we can say a bit more about that mind than just that it must be a mind of some kind. I had a little article in the New York Post about a month ago after the space alien thing broke, arguing that the God hypothesis was a better explanation for the origin of life in the universe than the space alien idea, which is also an idea I look at in the book. Scientists have actually proposed it. They call the idea panspermia, the idea that life was seeded on Earth by an alien being. Well, they propose that because it's turned out to be so very difficult to explain the origin of the first life from undirected chemical processes. And it's been very difficult to explain. And let's put it this way, that there's positive evidence for design in this world of digital nanotechnology inside cells. But they propose that if there is a designing intelligence, it must be a being out in space that itself evolved by undirected natural processes. But that just, of course, kicks the problem of the ultimate origin of life and the information needed to produce it out into space without in any way addressing that underlying and fundamental question. Moreover, no being within the cosmos, no alien, for example, could explain the origin of the universe itself or the origin of the fine-tuning of the universe that exists from the very beginning of the universe and upon which that alien being's future evolution and origin would depend. After all, an alien being can't reach back in time to cause the universe to come into existence in order to bring it into existence. That's just nonsensical.
Yes, so when
you look at the range of evidence, there is definitely evidence for personal intelligence, which I think is equivalent. If you're talking about a mind, you're talking about a personal agent. But there's evidence for a personal agent who both acts in the creation and acts at the beginning of the creation. So not a space alien, because a space alien can't act at the beginning, but not a deistic creator either, because a deistic creator, by definition, only acts at the beginning.
Hmm. Wow. As you were talking, I was thinking how much people use as their question right out of the box, you say, about the about atheists or just very strong agnostics who say we can't know, we'll never know. There are things we don't know now, that's for sure. But they say, well, what about the people who plead to God to right injustices? If there is an intelligent God and he's supposed to be, he, she, it is supposed to be a good God that loves goodness, they posit, then how come people cry out to God and the horrific? We're finding a lot of that today. We're living in some frighteningly dangerous and disturbing times in which people with the least possible credibility are attempting to subjugate other people. There's a mass psychosis, as I've said before, going on in this country, and there are people pleading to God to say, please open the eyes and let us all see the truth, but please let's not have the kind of tyranny that has led to so much misery and death. And we're on the precipice. We could be on the precipice of that. I know, another huge question, but I'd love your thoughts about that.
Well, a huge question. And the argument I make in the book is for what you might call basic theism. It provides a rational and scientific basis for belief in a transcendent and active creator, therefore an entity that has attributes that, for example, Jews and Christians have long associated with God, thus the title God Hypothesis. But the book doesn't distinguish. It doesn't attempt to adjudicate questions about which God. In fact, I had a great conversation earlier this week with a scientist who wanted to know, well, where do you go from there? And I happen to be a Christian and one who takes the Bible very seriously. And I think the scientific evidence does not allow us to, I think it allows a strong inference to the reality of a transcendent designing creator or intelligence. But to answer questions about, for example, the presence of evil in the world or the presence of suffering or even the presence of what's sometimes called natural evil, I think other explanatory resources are required. And as a Christian who takes the Bible seriously, I think the biblical account of how things got into the state they're in actually provides those explanatory resources. When we look at nature, for example, we see that it's beautifully designed, but there's also evidence of its corruption, of its decay. And the biblical text actually speaks to that. One of the books in the New Testament, the book of Romans, St. Paul says, from the things that are made, we can discern the invisible qualities of the Creator, his eternal power and divine nature. But he also says later in the same book that nature itself is in bondage to decay. And so on the basis of a sort of a biblical worldview, I would expect to see two things: evidence of aboriginal design, good design, but then evidence of some decay, maybe significant decay of that design in the natural world. It's like looking at a car where you see this fantastic engineering under the hood, but there's some rust on it as well. You don't discount the design of the car because there's been decay, and as evidenced by the rust. But in the moral realm, I think It just, it's my belief from reading the biblical account or scriptures that it's not in the will of God that any one person should dominate another, any one group of people should dominate or oppress another. There's just an awful lot about that all throughout the Hebrew Bible. And yet we have such oppression in our world, but that's a consequence of a choice that some humans make to harm others. Conversely, where we have established societies based on the notion that human beings have an intrinsic dignity in as a consequence of having been made in the image of their creator, and therefore also human rights that flow from that intrinsic dignity, those societies have done the best job of preventing oppression and making freedom possible. And so, and this is a long way of saying that the old free will defense against the problem of evil, and the atheist says, how can there be so much evil in the world if God exists? And the theists back to St. Augustine say, well, the evil is a consequence of human choice, and God thought that it best to make humans with that choice rather than to make puppets. And therefore, he knew he was taking a risk with the creation, but he has a plan for sorting it all out at the end.
Well, and I think the last time I talked to you, I don't even remember what show it was, I laid on you the slogan that I've put on my website and other places: God himself gave us free will. We should never expect less from our government. And so,
there is a connection between the notion of God granted freedom. We are made in the image of a creator who is creative, but essential to creativity is freedom. And,
without a doubt.
I think the founders of the United States understood that the reality of God and the reality of our creation in his image was the basis of the rights that they asserted that were the rights of all human beings.
Yes.
We
have to take a break.
And
I'm late,
right?
Again.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. I'm so glad we get to keep you a little longer, Dr. Stephen Mayer. We're going to continue this interesting discussion right after this. Stay tuned. You're on the Power Hour.
Products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. I am your host on Fridays and Wednesdays. That's Wednesdays and Fridays on the Power Hour. And this is my very first outing in that new schedule for the time being. Don't know how long, but I'm happy to do it as long as I get to. And we are talking to just a fascinating guest. You don't often get an opportunity to talk to someone who not only believes there's a God, but backs it up with science. Wow. And I think with religion and faith, people of faith under attack in ways we've never seen in this country that has always revered religious pluralism, it is so relevant today. So thank you very much. I just want to mention again Dr. Stephen Myers, a little bit of his bio, because he knows whereof he speaks. And you get to disagree, because we're not the party that says you don't get to disagree with us. You don't get to dissent. You just have to do as we say. So first, thank you, Dr. Stephen Meyer, for staying with us an unprecedented amount of time on this second hour of the Power Hour.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying the conversation very much.
Yeah, thank you. And so, everyone, Dr. Meyer is the author of several books, including Return of the God Hypothesis. Stephen C. Meyer, who received his PhD from Cambridge in the philosophy of science. He heads up he directs Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in, of all places, Seattle, and authored the New York Times bestseller Darwin's Doubt and Signature in the Cell, a London Times Literary Supplement Book of the Year. Distinguished, but also incredibly accessible. So thank you for staying with us. When we had to break, we were talking about how God didn't want to just make a bunch of puppets, and that God gave us free will. We shouldn't expect less from our government. And that comes with a few ahas that I'd love for you to speak to that I've had, I don't know, relatively recently. And that is that the accountability piece that the classic conservative believes in, that there should be personal accountability, is because you can't hold a puppet accountable to anything. Case in point, super quickly, is that we are coming up on the high holy days in the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur. And when I was a kid, I thought it was the most horrible time of year because everybody was crying and screaming and asking for forgiveness. And I was afraid we were all going to be sent to, you know, the Huskow or whatever because we sinned. But now as an adult, I welcome, and I have to say I don't go to shul a whole bunch during this time of year, but I do mark it and I pay attention, because we should rejoice that there, if you believe there's a God that will hold us accountable, it's because we're free enough to make decisions. You can't hold a puppet accountable. Your thoughts? How about waxing philosophic on that one?
Well, it's interesting. People who object to repentance, because it requires that kind of step of personal self-examination on our own parts. Well, I suppose let's not say people in the abstract. We all sort of do at one level. No one likes to acknowledge that, you know, the three hardest words to say in the English language, I was wrong. But I've been just noticing in movies that I've been watching and good TV series, some of them British. My wife and I like the British way of storytelling. But many of the stories that most grip us are stories where a personal character begins to have a transformation and to becoming a better person. It's part of what makes literature work. It's part of what keeps us interested in a story. And very often what is involved in such personal transformation is someone coming to the realization that he or she was wrong and apologizing. And those moments in stories and movies where someone who has harmed someone else has that insight and then confesses that problem to another person are often deeply moving, and they're transformative, and then things can move forward as people begin to experience that moral improvement. So, Yom Kippur and the notion of confession and self-examination, I think these are wonderful things because we're imperfect. And if we want to make the world better, we have to start with ourselves.
So true. And the left mocks people of faith as being arrogant and self-satisfied. And, of course, that's another projection. But they do it because they claim somehow it's not okay to be held accountable for your actions, or they don't like personal accountability at all. And bridge to the subject I want to get to a little bit in the vein of this idea of the God hypothesis is that I have come to learn again a little later on in life that people of faith are among the greatest threats to socialists and communists. They always go after people of faith. At the break, sometimes the best talk radio happens at the break. We were talking about how, you know, Jews have always been the canaries in the mineshaft, but now Christians are right in there with us. And that's one of the reasons why there are bonds being built in ways my parents would never have imagined between Christians and Jews, recognizing that we stand together for religious freedom. That being said, religious freedom is under attack today, and part of that is also to attack the whole idea of God. The atheism that you mention is interesting in that regard because it basically says there is no God, you can do anything you want, so why have law enforcement? Why have any right and wrong at all? I know it's a little out of the realm of a God hypothesis, but it seems to me that there's a vested interest in delegitimizing God today. Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, and let me turn it back a bit to the God hypothesis as a scientific explanation for evidence that we're uncovering in science. One of the reasons that a religious belief has been marginalized in what the Catholic scholar Richard John Newhouse called the public square. It's fine to be religious if you keep it to yourself. If you claim that it's your religious beliefs are only based on private experience, then it follows that you should keep your religious beliefs in the private sphere only. It's just a matter of what you do on Saturday or Sunday with a few other people who are similarly deluded as yourself. But if there's actually public evidence, publicly accessible, objective evidence for the reality of God, then it follows that religious beliefs may have implications for what we do in the public square. And of course, this was always the idea of our founders. They held it to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And they believe that we could know the reality of God by reason as well as by faith in the scriptural traditions. And therefore, the reality of God formed the basis of our public life. It affirmed the intrinsic dignity of each individual made in the image of God. It therefore affirmed universal equality, whether we held up those, whether we met those ideals or not. The ideals were laid out in our founding documents, and so. The theistic foundation of Western culture and the United States in particular has had very specific public consequences. And if you lose that theistic foundation, over time you will lose the beneficial consequences, the rule of law, the idea of human rights, the idea of intrinsic dignity, the idea of universal equality under the law. And inevitably, the powerful will begin to rule over the less powerful. This has been the sort of lesson of human history that, as Chairman Mao put it, you know, legitimacy flows from the out of the barrel of a gun. And we in the West have rejected that idea. So that government does not grant human rights. Human rights are intrinsic to the fact of being a human being because we were made and created in the image of God. If you lose the idea that there is a God that grants rights, Katie, bar the door. It gets really, really, you know, it can get really tough. And there's a wonderful passage in Solzhenitsyn's book, Warning to the West, a little book that he wrote during the years in which he was a dissident in the Soviet Union, in which he tells the story of a peasant woman who's weeping in the fields in 1917 as the Bolsheviks are taking over. And she says very poignantly, all this is happening because men have forgotten God.
Isn't that true? And so many other things men have forgotten, to be close to the land, you know? To, again, be accountable, to live on top of each other in cities, as I think Thomas Jefferson warned against. It's as if there's been a blueprint to dismantle everything good and decent in America right now, and we're watching it happen. So I guess I'd be remiss in not taking a few more minutes to get your, you said something great at the break also. I think you did. You said, I hate to push you to state opinion since you're a scientist and you're giving us scientific evidence and information, but you've said that you are a Christian, and I'd like to veer a tiny little bit to the whole idea of your idea about God helping or saving or having some intervention in this very scary time that we are dealing with. If we are headed towards the powerful ruling over the powerless in a place as liberty, in the place that originated the idea of against the divine rights of kings, then there are a lot of people that are hurting and fearful that that could happen in America. That could happen around the world if America falls, God forbid. Tooey, tooey, tooey. So could you talk a little bit about that as a Christian, as a conservative, maybe a little bit away from your scientific roots? Are you as despondent as some people that I've talked to about what's happening in the world? And what would you say to those if they wanted a little encouragement from you?
Well, I have a very famous colleague at Discovery Institute named George Gilder. And Gilder wrote the book Wealth and Poverty, which was the blueprint for the Reagan supply-side tax-cutting pro-innovation economic policies that Mr. Reagan adopted in the 1980s, which I think in retrospect were extremely successful. And Gilder has something that he says, that things can change as fast as minds can change. And in 1979, when I was, still in college, we were nearing the end of it, I think by most estimates, a failed political administration where I think something like 11 countries had fallen under the domination of the Soviet Union or radical Islamic regimes. We had rampant inflation, we had high interest rates, we had stagnant growth in the economy, and some policies were implemented that reversed all of that, and it did. They did so very quickly, and it was a different way of thinking about things. Ideas have consequences, and so I think Gilder's maxim is correct. And the key idea that I think we've lost is not an economic policy idea, although, there's all kinds of bad ideas in the culture right now, politically, economically, and everything else. But the key idea we've lost is our founding idea that we are made in the image of a benevolent creator who is the source of our rights and freedoms. And in other words, we've lost the God hypothesis. And I think whereas it's very easy to be pessimistic about many of the specific cultural trends that are taking place, there's a sense that many people have that the wheels are falling off in the culture. Mm-hmm. I think if we as a country come back to our roots and acknowledge the reality of God, if we regain the knowledge of God as one of the biblical documents describes it, then I think we will gain the wisdom that we need to address the problems that we're facing. The Hebrew Bible says beautifully, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And I think that word, of course, means reverence or awe or respect. And I think you can't have that kind of reverence and respect for God's ways if you don't first believe he exists. And so I hope in some small way the evidence and arguments that I've marshaled in this book will help people come back to that knowledge and therefore bring a change of mind in our culture that will have downstream consequences for generations to come.
Mm. Boy, from your mouth to God's ears, which is so ironic. That's why I think you're too humble, Doctor, by saying in some small way, because you've zeroed in on probably the biggest weapon against this kind of tyranny and the powerful ruling over the powerless that we can have. No wonder they want to put down religion. What was the first thing they did during the jump the shark mask mandates and coronavirus, that 15 days to slow the spread? Well, they went after churches and synagogues and places of worship in a totally different way than they did bars, right? That was slightly obvious, I would say. What would you, we do have a few more minutes and I want to take advantage of that. So what is one of the questions you get asked more often than any other that you love answering?
Well, thank you for asking. That's kind of you set me up beautifully. It's interesting. When you point out that the universe has this exquisite and improbable fine-tuning, and just to go into a little bit of detail, when we're talking about the fine-tuning of the laws and the constants of physics and the initial conditions of the universe, we're talking about the basic parameters of physics, like the rate at which the universe is expanding, or the strength of gravitational force, or the strength of electromagnetic force, the ratios between the fundamental forces, or the masses of the elementary particles. And what we find is that these basic physical parameters are just right. They're not, the masses are not too heavy, not too light. The forces are not too weak, not too strong. The expansion rate of the universe is not too fast, not too slow. Everything falls within a very precise and narrow range that allows life to exist. Against all odds, because the possible ranges of these different values or strengths or masses is immense, and the probability of getting it just right getting all these parameters just right turns out to be exponentially small. Now, that has suggested to many physicists a fine tuner, that we live in a kind of Goldilocks universe, a just right universe with the fine tuning pointing to a fine tuner. And the go-to atheistic argument in response, and what I get asked about a lot, is, well, what about the multiverse idea? What about the idea that there are billions and billions and billions of other universes out there, and that our universe just happens to be the lucky one? And therefore, there isn't any really design at work here. We're just the inevitable outcome of some underlying universe-generating mechanism where our universe happened to get everything just right. Now, there's two problems with that, and that is, first, that if there are just these other universes out there, and they're disconnected from ours, and after all, a universe, that's kind of what we mean by a universe, is it's a self-contained enclosure of everything that exists. But if there's not just everything that exists in our universe, but other universes, but they don't have any contact with one another, then nothing that happens in those other universes affects anything in this universe, including the probability of getting of whatever process set the fine-tuning parameters. So in virtue of that, these multiverse advocates, and physicists are proposing this as an alternative way of explaining the fine-tuning. They recognize that you would need to have some kind of underlying universe-generating mechanism that's spitting out universes every so often, so that they can portray our universe as a kind of lucky winner of a great cosmic lottery. But here's where the rubs come in. Even in theory, these universe-generating mechanisms themselves require exquisite prior fine-tuning in order to plausibly generate other universes. And that means that we've just pushed the question of the fine-tuning back one generation, out of view, perhaps, but there it is. If you want to explain the fine-tuning of our universe and how we got all the other ones that make our universe look inevitable, well, you have to have a universe-generating mechanism that is itself the product of prior unexplained fine-tuning, and so you're right back to the beginning with the need for an ultimate fine-tuner.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens, isn't it? It's like this circular argument. But who created that? But who created that? But who created that? So even, I know you get asked a lot, and we're starting to wrap it up. We have about 3 minutes. The evolution question, okay, or the Big Bang, that's the other one, the Big Bang theory. Well, okay, then who created what was before the Big Bang, right?
Well, in the piece I had in the Jerusalem Post on Sunday this last week, I discussed the work of Steven Weinberg, this famous Nobel laureate in physics, staunch new atheist, but who made contributions to many fields of physics, but also to cosmology. And his most famous popular book was called The First 3 Minutes. And he did a wonderful job of describing what scientists can now detect or infer about the very early state of the universe in the first 3 minutes after the beginning of the universe, also known as the Big Bang. But neither Weinberg nor any other astrophysicist has been able to explain what caused the origin of the universe, what caused the Big Bang, because our best physics suggests that the universe began in what's called a singularity, where matter and energy, as well as space and time themselves, began, before which we have no matter accessible to us that we can invoke to do the causing. You can't provide a materialistic explanation for the origin of matter because, after all, it's matter that comes into existence at that point of origin. So this is a profound mystery that seems to point to the need for a different kind of cause, a cause which is timeless, outside of space, and has immense power and, indeed, a kind of volitional capability to change the state of things from nothing to something, from nothing to everything. That sounds like a great transcendent mind. And when we couple that inference with the evidence we have of fine-tuning from the beginning, it looks to me like we have evidence of a transcendent intelligence. And oddly, Weinberg also helped discover some of these fine-tuning parameters. And so though he was a great scientific atheist, his own work, I think, pointed in the opposite direction.
How about that? That's a great place to kind of end our discussion for today. However, talking to you is like getting to the heart, soul, and all of it about the kind of things that I talk about and we talk about on talk radio these days, which is saving the country from tyranny, socialism, communism, all of these things that we're living to watch in our very own time. And you said it beautifully about God. They have forgotten God, and you help people remember. Tell everybody where they can find your book. Your current book, The God
Thanks for asking. Sure. It's on all of the, available through all the online distributors, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon.com, Indie Books, and it's probably in bookstores too. Certainly Barnes & Noble is listing it.
Remember those? Remember those bookstores? Wow.
Yeah, that's right. Actual bookstores. But it's easy to get on the online sellers. And there's quite a spirited review war going on at Amazon.com. So
really? I encourage everybody to go read that, because when you read the comments of people and how hostile some people are to the whole notion of God, oh, you Neanderthal. Doesn't matter. We've all been called Neanderthals enough already. So anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Stephen Meyer, for your time and for your great work. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we hope to have you back again in a while. Okay.
Thank you for taking time and for your very perceptive and interesting questions. It's been a great discussion, I think.
Well, thank you. We're going to put it on podcast so people can hear it. Take care, and thank you. We appreciate
you
it.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Our pleasure. That is such a accomplished man, and how gracious he was. Thank you to everybody at Power Hour. I'll be back next Wednesday to impose upon you myself. And thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Good Shabbos if you're Jewish. Chazak means strength.
Who is sleeping on the waters? Who is holding up the moon? Who is peeling back the darkness? Burning light of noon. Who is standing on the mountains? Who is on the earth below? Who is bigger than the heavens? And the lover of my soul. Creator God, He is Yahweh. I am, He is Yahweh, the Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Rose of Sharon, He is Yahweh, righteous Son, He is Yahweh, the three in one, He is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.